Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in Union City, New Jersey, this is Talk on the Hudson. I am Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here tonight, May. Again, I want to thank you for listening from wherever you are here in the good old US of A on Blog Talk Radio. You can always write to the show's inbox, ladies and gentlemen, which is talkofthehudson@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram by going to @your_favorite_Fernando and on Twitter, @theGloriousFUJ. And of course, for all you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Talking the Hudson and like it, of course. And I ask you to tell your friends to do the same. Now, Talking the Hudson is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant, ladies and gentlemen. It's a brand new gem in Hudson County, and it's the best Italian food you will taste anywhere. So, again, if you're looking to get summer ready, well, you know, it might be kind of hard going to Olivella, but you know what? It's so worth it. Trust me, it's the best Italian food you're going to taste anywhere here in the area. And Olivella Restaurant is located at 7709 Bergen Line Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. Again, once again, they're located at 7709 Bergen Line Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. They're open for dinner 7 days a week. I strongly recommend you call ahead and make a reservation. You don't want to be left waiting online to get a table because it does get packed there on a nightly basis. You can call the reservation hotline 201-662-6110. Once again, 201-662-6110. Don't forget to check out their website, www.olivellanj.com. You can check out their full menu there and all the delicious dishes there available there to eat on a, again, on a nightly basis. Trust me, you won't go wrong going to Olivella in North Bergen. Don't forget to like Olivella on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Now, folks, I want to hear from you tonight, so don't be shy and call me toll-free tonight at 657-383-0296. Once again, 657-383-0296, our toll-free number this evening on Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, I'm glad to have you join me tonight here on Blog Talk Radio, and my goodness, happy May. We're only a couple days away from Cinco de Mayo. A great time to be out and celebrating with this warm weather. And, you know, I think old man winter seems to be behind us and in the rearview mirror. So hopefully warmer and nicer days are ahead of us all. So I'm looking forward to this great month. Obviously, May is one of my favorite, actually the favorite month of the year for me, because it is indeed my birthday month. And 2 weeks from tonight, yes, yours truly will be very blessed to be celebrating another birthday. So I will have a show that night. So I look forward to speaking with you on my birthday there for a another edition of Talking the Hudson again, May 17th. Great day for me, and of course, for anyone who's a Taurus, we all know what's about here, the month of May. Definitely producing some very good people. And tonight, folks, we start with the real truth. Now, I'm an educator, and you know what? And I'm damn proud of it. Now, sure, my job's a little easier than some of my colleagues who work in high schools and middle schools and elementary schools. But in the end, we are all teachers. Now, sure, I get very annoyed when my peers in academia don't like being referred to as, quote, teachers. They're professors or they're academics or they're scholars. Folks, stop with the semantics. We're all teachers at the end of the day. And, you know, again, I feel a certain type of solidarity and brotherhood and even sisterhood, too, with my fellow educators, no matter the level, no matter what they are teaching. Again, as I said, it's, you know, I'm a proud teacher at the end of the day. I don't like to ever go with that, you know, notion that, oh, well, I'm a professor and I'm not on the same level, you know, I'm more advanced or I'm, you know, superior to teachers who work at, you know, the lower school levels, and that's just not the case at all. I'm a proud teacher. Certainly it's easier for me teaching adults than it is children, for sure. But at the end of the day, obviously we're teaching, we're educating, and it's that simple. So I'm a proud teacher. Again, with Teacher Appreciation Week coming up next week, I'm looking forward to, of course, celebrating that with all of my peers in the profession. Now, listen, just because I'm an educator doesn't mean that I can't be objective about this also. And I get it. Many taxpayers in New Jersey don't like the NJEA, otherwise known as the New Jersey Education Association, or the AFT, the chapter here in New Jersey, which represents the American Federation of Teachers. And who can blame them? If you do some research online, you'll find out that their executive board members earn a pretty hefty salary. Meanwhile, many teachers throughout the state are still struggling to even get supplies for their classrooms. And that's a really frustrating thing to learn when I'm reading about this. Now, luckily, I don't have to deal with that. I don't have a classroom to decorate. I don't really need supplies. I pretty much just lecture. If I have to do a PowerPoint, I just plug in my laptop into the AV unit in the classrooms where I teach at, which, again, is very AV user friendly. So I'm very fortunate about that. But it doesn't mean that I'm oblivious to the struggle about what teachers go through in New Jersey. They're underpaid. They are underappreciated. And it's something that, quite frankly, needs to stop. And I know that here in New Jersey for the last 8 years, we've been living under a climate that has been pretty hostile to teachers under Governor Chris Christie. But I think I'll again, I'm not here to defend the governor, but I think I'm here to sort of provide some clarity. I think the majority of the hostility that exists, I think, has been against the teachers union, the NJEA, and the AFT. And I can tell you, as a member, it frustrates me because what we see is this sort of lack of cohesion at the upper level of the NJEA. And listen, I've reached out to them, and they're either the president of the NJEA or some executive show here, because I very much want to have a nice discussion about this. And I know many of my friends who are teachers work hard every day. Now, sure, there are some teachers that, of course, have been tenured already and maybe don't put in the same effort as others who are just starting in the profession and maybe aren't as invested emotionally into the profession. And I get all that, and I understand that. And I'm not one to be sympathetic to that, because I get it. I grew up in West New York, a great school district for as long as I remember, from elementary school into high school. The West New York School District was always very well respected, very highly regarded. It still is, as a matter of fact. I was just there at the high school the other day, meeting with a good friend of mine, Mr. Scott Wolrab, the principal of Moore High School, my alma mater. Good guy, good administrator. And, as I walk through the halls and I walk into the offices, I see the recognition. I see the accomplishments, the achievements. I get it, throughout here in Hudson County, we have a lot of great school districts. We have a lot of dedicated teachers who work hard, who get up early, get to school, grade papers, come home, they have to grade papers, do lesson plans. Now, again, one of the things I'm very fortunate about is I don't really have to do that. Aside from devising the syllabus at the onset of the semester, making sure that it's coherent and making sure that it covers everything it's supposed to cover according to departmental guidelines, that's it. Pretty much on a weekly basis, I'm preparing lecture notes. I wouldn't say I wing it, because that's not what I do, but I take the material that I assign in the readings and we discuss it constructively in a way that is thought provoking and, I would say intellectually as well. So in that regard, I really luck out, but I know teachers firsthand. I know the workload that they bring home, the lesson plans that they have to do, that they have to submit to their supervisors each and every week. And that's time consuming. And I've dated a lot of teachers in my life, so I know firsthand the workload that's involved with it, and I'm not one of those people that just sort of is trying to speak out of both sides of my mouth. I'm not. That's not what I do here. And that's not what we do here on Talking to Hudson. I really want to raise awareness about the fact and never mind that it's Teacher Appreciation Week coming up, but we need to appreciate teachers every day. And that's something that I'm always a champion of. That's something that I'm a defender of. But again, what I'm not a defender of is sort of like the inept bureaucracy that I see at the upper levels, especially when it comes to union membership, where I think even you know, in a lot of school districts, and we're going to talk about some school districts that aren't very responsible, and we'll talk about that later in the program. But that can be frustrating. And I, you know, whether it's on social media, whether it's articles I read online from newspapers or blogs, it's tough being a teacher anywhere in this country. It's tough being a teacher here in New Jersey. Again, you're not paid accordingly. Your raises don't come on time the way they should. And it's, you know, it's unfortunate. Again, you know, we'll talk about what's going on in Bayonne, for example, in just a few moments. But we see what's happening there in that city and other districts around New Jersey. And, it's an outright travesty as far as I'm concerned. And one of the things I want to really raise awareness about tonight here on the show, ladies and gentlemen, not just tonight, but this is not an issue that I'm just going to take lightly and not never bring up again, because, again, I have reached out to representatives from the teachers unions locally and also at the state level, because I want to get them on here. I want to have a constructive debate. I want to have a discussion, ask to sort of maybe dispel some of the myths that exist about teachers and the profession itself here in New Jersey, why the, you know, why the union itself maybe hasn't worked as hard as it should. I don't mean that on a local level. I mean that on a state level. When we see, you know, a lot of the members of the executive board, you know, not fighting as hard, I think, for the line staff. Sure, you know, administrators make a lot of money, whether it's superintendents and whether it's department supervisors or principals, and I get that. And I don't want to get into whether or not that's well-deserved or anything like that. I mean, those are salaries and those are steps that are collectively bargained. So, you know, I don't want to debate that. You know, I'm not in a position to do that and I'm not qualified to do that. But what I will say is I don't think the teachers' unions at the state level fight hard enough for teachers. And that's a position that I'm not going to relinquish. And I'm sure many teachers tonight are listening and saying, well, you know, how can Fernando say that? Well, the reason I say that is because, again, I don't think the problem is at the local level. I think the problem is at the state level. What is your executive board doing? What are they doing for getting better increments when it comes to our salaries, when it comes to tenure reform? All of these things are important. And, you know, I'm hoping to continue to shed light on them, and we'll do that. You know, and again, as I mentioned to you before, what's going on in a lot of school districts in New Jersey, specifically here in Hudson County, for example, it's a travesty. And it shouldn't happen, you know, but until parents, taxpayers, and even our elected officials demand clarity, we're not going to get anywhere. It's as simple as that. So, you know, do I have everybody's attention now? I hope so. We have to keep fighting, keep appreciating teachers each and every day. And that's the real truth. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to call in tonight, toll free at 657-383-0296, because I want to hear from you what's on your mind about Hudson County. And again, our toll free number is brought to you by Alavella Restaurant in North Bergen. And folks, tonight, you know, a little deviation. We're not going to have a guest on tonight, but I do want to discuss some important topics here countywide. And first and foremost, again, sort of to follow up from my opening monologue here on The Real Truth, I wanted to talk about what's been going on in the city of Bayonne. And, you know, a great article I just came across here today as it was updated via Hudson County View, you know, a great local site administered by a buddy of mine, you know, very respected journalist here in Hudson County by the name of John Hines. You check out his good work at Hudson County View, www.hudsoncountyview.com. And, you know, a good story in yesterday's edition of the Hudson County View, talking about Bayonne Mayor Jimmy Davis calling for a criminal investigation as it pertains to the Board of Education funding in the city. And to the best of my knowledge, sources tell Hudson County View, and also I made some phone calls as well. I've also made some I've sent some text messages out as, you know, also to get some clarity here, because I don't understand what's going on. But, you know, it's, to the best of my knowledge, Mayor Davis is calling on Hudson County Prosecutor Esther Suarez to conduct a criminal investigation into the mismanagement of the Board of Education finances, which has caused 261 layoffs as recently as last week. Now, Mayor Davis submitted a letter Monday to Prosecutor Suarez, asking her to look into instances of official misconduct, according to sources within knowledge of the situation. Now, according to the article, again, sources that spoke to Hudson County View under the condition of anonymity said that they were not authorized to speak on the matter. Now, apparently, in a public statement issued last week, Mayor Davis called for accountability at the Board of Education, who made it public knowledge that they're operating with a budget deficit of at least $6 million. The mayor went on to say, quote, since November of 2016, when this issue first came to light, I've stood by offering any assistance available only to be rebuked by the Board of Ed. Now, the mayor went on to say also in his statement, quote, as public servants and superintendents, school administrators are accountable to all of us, including the Board of Education members, and should answer the basic questions that have been asked for over 6 months. How did this happen? Who is responsible? And most importantly, how does it affect our children in Bayonne? Now, as a result of the Board of Education approving 261 layoffs last Wednesday, Bayonne High School students walked out of class on Thursday and they hit the streets right in front of the high school and throughout the township, voicing their displeasure. Now, a spokesman for the prosecutor's office as well as the mayor's office did not return any calls seeking additional comment. Now, listen, you know, I read this and I had to read it a couple of times. And then after I read it, I remember reaching out to some sources I had in the community and also within the city to sort of get some clarity about this. And I'll tell you, first and foremost, kudos to the students at Bayonne High School. Kudos to them for taking to the streets in a peaceful manner, in a very civil manner, and just, you know, exercising their freedom to assemble in a respect, again, in a very civilized and again, very, I think, calm manner. So first and foremost, I got to give kudos to the students of Bayonne High School, which I don't think got enough credit during this entire ordeal. More times than not, you know, we've known about protesting in the last 2 months. It can be very exhausting, and I think a lot of people are sort of burnt out from protest of anything and everything, so if you know what I'm saying. So in any event, it's, again, it's very reassuring seeing that the students of Bayonne High School took the streets in a civil manner, in a peaceful manner, and they exercised their right to protest about this, what I would call is just irresponsible spending when it pertains to the Board of Education. Now, listen, I think it sort of leads back to a point I made during my opening monologue tonight, folks. And again, folks, I want to hear from you tonight. Just my Bayonne listeners, 657-383-0296. Once again, 657-383-0296. Toll free number brought to you by Alavella Restaurant. And, you know, it goes back to one of the points I made in my monologue. More times than not, I think that the anger that's directed at teachers, I think, is misguided. It's misplaced. I don't think the anger should really ever be directed at teachers. I think whether it's teachers in Bayonne, teachers in West New York, teachers in Union City, Hoboken, Harrison, Kearney, Guttenberg, North Bergen, Weehawken, you know, take your pick here in Hudson County. You know, these are all, for the most part, you know, these are all teachers that are working very hard. They're working under very tough circumstances. They're working sometimes without any increments in their contract. And you know what? They're giving a lot of themselves for our students. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I sort of practice as well. Do I earn what I think I should earn as an academic here in New Jersey? No, I don't. I think I should earn more. I think I think if you went across, you know, a poll of a random 100 people, and regardless of what industry they work in, I'm sure they all want to make more. So it's not uncommon to have this mindset. You know, I think that when we look at the situation in Bayonne, it's just downright irresponsible. And this is where I think, again, I think a lot of parents, taxpayers like myself, voice just a lot of displeasure. You're seeing such fiscal mismanagement taking place. I mean, to be honest with you, listen, folks, $6 million is not chump change, okay? $6 million is probably an amount of money that none of us will ever see here in Hudson County. If you're part of the working class like me, you're never going to see the equivalent of $6 million in your lifetime, okay? So that's, you know, that's a lot of money. And when you're responsible for administering a budget in the city of Bayonne, again, one of our larger cities in Hudson County, with a growing population and a very diverse student population, you're seeing our students there being shortchanged. And it's tragic. And when I hear Mayor Davis calling out the Board of Education, the Board of Education president, its members, listen, I, you know, kudos to Mayor Davis. And I know Jimmy personally. I got to know Jimmy in 2014 when I was still doing local journalism. I'd like to thank the expose that I did with Hudson TV helped greatly in getting him elected and beating and actually upsetting the incumbent Mark Smith in Bayonne. But in the time that I was, you know, working there as a journalist, I got to know Jimmy Davis. You know, I got to know him as a good man, a guy who cares, a guy who I think has been genuine and transparent. And, you know, listen, again, I give him all props in the world coming out this week. I'm sure that wasn't easy to call out members of the Board of Education. I'm sure that, you know, that those members there are voters. They're part of his constituency, of course, and I'm sure it wasn't easy for him to go out there and just be as defiant as he's been this week with his statement. But let's be very fair. I think as the mayor of the city and seeing this outright mismanagement, you can't blame him. I think he's within his rights to do so. I think he's within his job description to do what's best for the city of Bayonne. That's what he swore an oath to, and part of that oath includes children, includes making sure that the children of the city of Bayonne are receiving the best education they possibly can. And quite frankly, they're not. And when you've seen layoffs, you know, 261 layoffs last week, that's a lot of personnel. It is. And I sit here, and mind you, I tried reaching out to the Board of Education, and no one returned my calls to come on the show. I very much want to have them come on and discuss what's going on. Nobody was interested, wasn't surprised about. I've also reached out to Prosecutor Suarez's office, not just about this, but I mean, hopefully have her on in the coming weeks, so I'm excited about that. I've also, you know, looking to have her days on here. Hopefully we can discuss this issue at length. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, when I read an article like this, it's infuriating to me. Now, listen, I don't think by any means that Jimmy Davis is trying to score any political points here. I'll go on record right now. If you had to ask me, my hunch tells me he's just simply doing what's right by the students and by the parents of Bayonne. These are people that voted him into office, you know, 3 years ago. And to be very fair, if you don't think that this is going to be an issue coming up next year when he's up for re-election, and I don't know who his opponent's going to be. I don't know what he or she is planning in terms of a strategy. But I'll tell you right now, this continues. This is going to be an open wound that could haunt Mayor Davis. And I'm not saying this because I'm trying to implicate him at all. I mean, the mayor doesn't have anything to do with this. You know, the Board of Education has made it a priority to just sort of act in a casual way. And you know what? The casualties here are the students of the city of Bayonne. Whether it's teachers, whether it's certain administrators that are being laid off. I mean, folks, 261, you know, administrator employees at the Board of Ed, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. And when you see this sort of responsibility on the part of the Board of Education, I mean, that's, folks, you know, when I look at that number, I mean, I think of $6 million. I mean, that's just, that's outrageous. It's just, it's outrageous to me, you know, to think that the Bayonne Board of Education is even capable of such mismanagement. And, you know, when I did a little research on this issue, again, after Mayor Davis made a statement this week, I mean, at the same time, you know, as recently as late last year in November, you know, from what research I did, it was brought to my attention that the Bayonne Board of Education declined Mayor Davis's offer to host a meeting at City Hall between representatives from the Board of Education and local teacher and members of the local teachers union in terms of contract negotiations. And that is just, that's crazy to me. That's absolutely nuts when I see this, that the Bayonne Board of Education just doesn't care. They don't. And, you know, I think heads have to roll. And when we hear, you know, the mayor coming out publicly and saying, you know what, hey, please, to the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office, you know, you need to look at this. There's perhaps something criminal going on here. There's a mismanagement of finances, okay, that, you know, we're seeing some sort of official misconduct. I mean, that's, folks, that's something serious. That's not something to mess around about. And when I read this and I sort of you know, when I didn't get a response from the Bayonne Board of Education and any representatives there don't even want to talk to members of the media or anyone else. Listen, folks, we're not media here. So, and I was making that very clear to the representative at the Bayonne Board of Education. I said, listen, I'm not calling from any of the local newspapers. I'm not calling from the Hudson Reporter. I'm not calling from the Jersey Journal. I'm not from any of the online media services, whether it's Hudson County View or Hudson TV. That's not what I'm doing. It's not what I'm representing. I'm representing Fernando Uribe and Talking to Hudson, an independent podcast that is a voice for the people. And I simply just want to be able to have somebody from the Bayonne Board of Ed come on the show for only a few minutes and to just openly discuss this and maybe even debate what's going on. And it's frustrating because, again, it's, you know, I don't have a dog in the fight because I don't live in Bayonne. But you know what? As an educator, it bothers me. It bothers me seeing, you know, teachers being laid off in Bayonne. Teachers that worked hard to get to where they're at, you know, that went to school, that put themselves through school, that took on very challenging curriculum. I get that, you know. And to have them just, you know, laid off is just crazy. Other town personnel as well. I mean, I don't have a dissection. Excuse me. 261 entails, but that's just a lot of people. And when you see the Bayonne Board of Education just sort of being very smug and very dismissive of, you know, any questions about what they're doing, listen, no offense, and I don't really care what the Bayonne Board of Education thinks about the following, but I'll say this. I think you are all a disgrace. I think you're all a disgrace for what you're doing to kids and their parents who work, who pay taxes, and they pay your salaries. And their property taxes pay for the schools in the city of Bayonne. And when you are mismanaging to the extent of a deficit of $6 million, folks, I don't know about you, but I'm going to side with Mayor Davis on this. I think it is criminal. Now, I don't have a law degree. Okay, I have a PhD, which is a very, very different type of doctoral degree. But I'll say this much. I know enough about the law that, you know what, where there's smoke, there's fire. And this is criminal. And it's absolutely criminal what's going on. And I promise you here, especially to all of my my Bayonne listeners, I'll continue following up. I will continue trying to get some answers here. I'll try to get somebody from the Bayonne Board of Ed on here. As a matter of fact, I'm also going to try to get on Mayor Davis here at some point, hopefully on the show, and try to discuss what's going on, because this is just unacceptable. And, you know, it's tragic. It's tragic because I know a lot of people in Bayonne that don't deserve what's going on. They just don't. And when I see this, and when I see this sort of just blatant disregard for taxpayers and for parents and for children, you know what? That infuriates me. It really, really does. And again, you know, we'll keep you posted on here on Talking to Hudson as pertains to any updates. Of course, you know, if you haven't checked out the page and get on Facebook, make sure you like it at facebook.com/Talking to Hudson. I will post any updates about the show and about any upcoming guests, specifically as it pertains to what's going on here in Bayonne. And to be honest with you, it's crazy. I read this and it boils my blood when I, you know, listen, I understand that different boards throughout the county operate under very different budgets and they have very different issues that they have to deal with when it comes to spending and everything else and the finances that govern the educational system. So I'm not going to propose to sit here and say, well, I'm just as well versus what's going on in Bayonne as what's going on in West New York, Union City, or Weehawken, or, you know, let's say Sea Caucus. They're all very different dynamics. But the one thing I can say is that I don't believe, at least from the research I've done, that anyone is acting anywhere near as recklessly and as irresponsible as the Bayonne Board of Education. So we'll keep you posted on this, ladies and gentlemen. Again, kudos to Mayor Davis for calling out the Bayonne Board of Ed. We're going to find out exactly what happens. Excuse me, folks. With the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office, I don't know if this is something that Prosecutor Suarez is going to want to take on. This might be a little dicey, to be very honest with you, in terms of trying to open up a criminal investigation into this. Whether or not this is just for sensationalism purposes, I don't know. I don't know Mayor Davis to be that way, but I can tell you that from reading comments and just from talking to people that I know on the street about this issue, it's you know, people are fed up in Bayonne. We're going to find out, you know, again, the school year is almost over. We have about maybe, I don't know, 40-something days until the end of the academic school year in Hunter County. But by and large, I think it's about 40 to 45 days. And, you know, there needs to be some accountability here. We don't know what's going to happen, if any action will be taken before the summer. But rest assured, this is something that's going to be in the news cycle in the weeks and months ahead here in Hudson County, because I don't see this story going away anytime soon. So, again, shout out to Hudson County View. Good article today highlighting Bayonne Mayor Davis's cries for the prosecutor's office to, again, look into the fiscal mismanagement of the Board of Education and Finances in the city of Bayonne. So we'll find out again. We'll keep you posted here, folks, on Talking to Hudson, because, you know, you deserve answers, and I'll try to get them for you here on Talking to Hudson. So, folks, again, call in tonight. I want to hear from you. 657-383-0296. Am I wrong here to sort of, crucify the Bayonne Board of Education? I don't think I am, but if you think I'm wrong and you think I'm off base, please tell me about it. I welcome your calls. I want to welcome discussion here. I welcome debate here on Talking to Hudson. So I want to hear from you again. 657-383-0296. Toll-free number brought to you by Alavella Restaurant in North Bergen. Now, another story I wanted to talk about tonight, folks. Here, again, sort of moving up a little bit north in the county into Jersey City. Good article by my dear friend, Max Pizarro, who is the editor-in-chief of InsiderNewJersey.com, a great new local site, statewide, that covers Jersey politics and issues just affecting residents everywhere in the entire Garden State. So it's a great new site. Definitely check it out, www.insidernj.com. Great story today by editor-in-chief Max Pizarro, a good friend of mine. And apparently it was discovered that Stephen Phillip rival, Steve Sweeney, who is the New Jersey State Senate president out in South Jersey, apparently gave $5,000 to Bill Matakunas' Jersey City mayoral campaign in December of last year. Now, apparently, according to the article, now again, good stuff here by Max Pizarro via Insider NJ. Now, apparently, last year's pre-gubernatorial primary fight between State Senate President Steve Sweeney, a Democrat out of the 3rd Legislative District in South Jersey, and Jersey City Mayor Stephen Phillip featured numerous, you know, jabs at each other as they eventually were looking to pair off as antagonists in the upcoming primary to win the Democratic nomination for governor. And of course, we all know that went for nothing, as former ambassador to Germany, Phil Murphy, ended up becoming the sort of heads-on favorite to win the nomination coming up here in June during the primary. Now, Stephen Phillip and Steve Sweeney both tapped out of the race back-to-back last fall, and they endorsed Murphy for governor on their own timeline. But something that could still linger here that could be a little bit of a burn for Jersey Mayor Stephen Phillip is the fact that it surfaced that in December of 2016, Steve Sweeney wrote and delivered a $5,000 check to the mayoral campaign account of Bill Matakunas, according to the State Election Law Enforcement Commission, which is ELEC. Now, Matakunas is the former corporation counsel with about $250,000 in the bank, who is indeed challenging Stephen Phillip in this year's mayoral race, which takes place in November. Now, for some time, Insider New Jersey had heard rumors of Sweeney pumping up Matakunas and the campaign, but the actual gift does prove, at the very least, that Sweeney was looking to give some trouble to Stephen Phillip on his own turf. And listen, for those of you that what's funny is that in this entire, you know, in this time frame going on, you know, last spring, you know, at this time last year, there was a very, very real possibility that between Phil Murphy, who already started campaigning very heavily in New Jersey, I started seeing ads, I remember, as going back to last year's TV, but slowly but surely you started seeing Jersey City Mayor Stephen Phillip and his name being whispered, and you also started seeing Steve Sweeney's name also being mentioned within the within the discussion. And it was interesting because I remember that it was sort of funny because I remember that seeing all of the hype about Steve Phillip, you know, going Mike. And listen, and let me tell you a quick story here. That sort of, I don't want it to sound like sour grapes for me, but one of the things that I admired a lot about Steve Phillip's campaign back in the spring of 2013. Again, I was doing journalism for Hudson TV, at the time Hudson County TV, where I was hosting the Uribe Express, some very informative segments I was doing. And I remember leading up to that election when he was really, you know, facing the biggest of odds with then incumbent Mayor Jeremiah Haley and the entire Hudson County political establishment. And I remember speaking to Steve Phillip on numerous occasions. I did many segments with him. I was the only member of the local media that was really giving Stephen Phillip any press whatsoever. If you were at the Jersey Journal, if you were the Hudson Reporter, if you were anything locally, pretty much it was all about the incumbent. It was all about Jerry Healey. It was all about, you know, looking at pulling off maybe one of the biggest political upsets in Hudson County's history by trying to unseat not only Jerry Healey, but also gain control of the city council. And what ended up happening in May of 2013 is Stephen Phillip did the impossible. He went out there, he was energizing residents in Jersey City, and he won. He won convincingly, and he also won control of the city council. He basically almost swept the city council seats, which was quite astonishing at the time. You know, short of, you know, two members of the city council, which are independents, you know, it was an astonishing victory for Stephen Phillip. And I remember that spring as I was interviewing him numerous occasions, I remember I had a handshake agreement with Steve Phillip. And I remember saying to him, Steve, you know, I look forward to seeing you win in May. I think that you're going to have a breath of fresh air for Jersey City that's desperately needed right now. And I think you're going to pull this off. I think you're going to beat the machine, which, again, had only happened only once in recent history. You know, going back 2 years earlier, you know, Dr. Roque, the current mayor of West New York at the time, he also was one of the biggest political upsets in the history of the county by then unseating Mayor Salazar, who had also the support of the Hudson County machine, the Hudson County Democratic Organization. And I remember when Steve Phillip looked at me right in the face and he said, you know, Fernando, I hope I can win. I had a good feeling about winning. And we had a handshake agreement. I remember saying to him, listen, you know, once you take office, I think it would be great to meet in your office every couple of weeks to do a segment, sort of like a State of the City address, and talk about issues that affect residents. And this is your way of speaking to your constituents. That was excited. As a matter of fact, I remember those segments were probably some of the highest viewed segments on the website. And I had and I had people come up to me, both in person, on the street, and also via social media. Send me, Fernando, these are great segments. I feel really informed about what's going on in Jersey City, and I'm glad you're the one that's doing these segments with Mayor Phillip. And it was great. It was great going on from, like, you know, from July 1st and on. It was great to go to his office and meet every couple weeks. And, you know, I didn't want to think the worst because I'm very cynical sometimes of politicians. But I was wrong. You know, my gut told me that Steve Phillip was not going to be this guy. And you know, he ended up becoming everything that we always think about when we try to stereotype politicians. And I remember after scheduling with him every couple of weeks to meet in his office. Mind you, folks, it wasn't like I was thinking of an hour of his time. I was thinking maybe 15, 20 minutes at the most. And in his office, he didn't have to go anywhere. And then scheduling became complicated. Not only did I have to go through one person to schedule, then I had to go through two. And then from two, I had to go through three. And it became such a task to interview the mayor that it went from doing it biweekly to then doing it monthly. And then after doing it monthly, I started getting a runaround from representatives from his office saying, well, the mayor is very busy. We don't know if we can do this monthly. And I remember reaching out to Steve, and I said to him, face-to-face, I said, Mr. Mayor, like, this is wrong. Like, I'm trying to do a service for the residents. you campaign on transparency. This is what these segments are about. You know, please don't do this. And he looked me right in the face and said, Fernando, listen, it's not my fault. You know, I'm going to do my best to be as available as I can, scheduling-wise, for these segments. I know they're important. You know, you do a good job. I love doing these segments with you. And that was great. And he shook my hand, and he looked me right in the face. And quite frankly, he lied right to my face. And that was disappointing. Because shortly after that, once 2014 came, let me tell you, it was possible to schedule anything with the mayor. And it got to a point where his office pretty much said, like, they weren't interested in doing the segments anymore. And the first thing I thought of, I was like, well, wait a minute. Did I do something during the segments? Was I disrespectful to the mayor? Was I asking inappropriate questions? And I went back and I watched every segment I filmed with him. And mind you, I filmed a good amount with him shortly after he was inaugurated on July the 1st in 2013. And I went back and I watched them. I even had other people watch them. I said, listen, maybe I'm biased. Maybe I'm not seeing something. Could you watch these segments and tell me if I'm doing something wrong here? And you know what? It was so disappointing because I never heard from Steve Phillip again. He stopped returning my calls. He was a guy that I could text and I would get a response within a reasonable amount of time. Never got my phone calls returned, whether it's on his mobile or at his office. And, you know, I don't want to say that I developed sort of a bad taste in my mouth about Steve Phillip, but I'll be the first one to tell you, when I heard that his name could very much be implicated in the Bridgegate scandal, and that's according to sources telling me that was probably the reason that he decided to step down from running for governor, I'll be the first one to tell you, folks, I was happy. I thought that was karma. I thought that was great. And I don't really care how this comes off and sounds, but, you know, Steve Phillip was wrong for doing that. And I think what he's done consistently for some time, not just to me back then, because I'm not a journalist anymore, so it doesn't really bother me. But I know consistently what Steve Phillip has done to many members of the press here in Hampton County. Has been to be very evasive, to not be cooperative, and to be very honest, to be completely non-existent. And that's a shame. And that's tragic because, you know, the people deserve better. And I know when I talk to very good friends of mine, such as Al Sullivan, the dean of Hudson County Journalism, or when I've spoken to Terrence McDonald at the Jersey Journal, or I've spoken to other journalists, seeing the sort of lack of cooperation from Steve Phillip is disappointing. And, you know, last year when it was announced that he was not going to run for governor, and listen, folks, let's be very honest, from the minute he got inaugurated as mayor, we started seeing fundraisers, we started seeing sort of the team he was assembling, you know, in his camp, and every sign was leading to him running for governor, to the point of, you know, moving the election from normally in Jersey City, what's always been in May of every 4 years, the mayoral race, and now moving it to November. And everyone in Jersey City, I mean, it was going on for weeks. I remember reading tons of articles. I've seen a lot of people saying that the mayor should be doing that because he wants to give himself time. That if he wins the primary, you know, he can still, you know, decide whether or not to run for mayor. And if he loses the primary, he still has a chance to run for mayor of November of that year. Well, it worked out for him because guess what? He got the election moved from May to November. He was able to get the city council to pass a resolution to get this done. And now when he decided not to run for governor, guess what? It's sort of smooth sailing for him. He can sort of run for re-election. Now, reading this article today, again, on Insider NJ, again, great, great piece, a great, great site. You can always check out each and every day, www.insidernj.com, a great, great site. And again, just, you know, they're a great organization led by Editor-in-Chief Max Pizarro. You know, again, a great news organization statewide. But when I read this today and seeing that Steve Sweeney's name got floated around and he gave $5,000 to Bill Matsakoudis at his mayoral campaign and his attempt to unseat Mayor Phillip, I'll tell you, I was laughing. I'm not going to lie. I was laughing. I was sitting there and I'm saying to myself, oh my God, like Steve Phillip must have been flipping out. He must have been going crazy. No, Sweeney, you know, now mind you, this isn't, it's not like he did it yesterday. I mean, again, according to the payment date and the disbursement was made again, last year, on December 29th of 2016. And according to the form provided by the ELEC, again, the Kudos is for Mayor's Office, which is at 344 Grove Street in Jersey City, and seeing the amount of $5,000, I mean, that's insane. And I can only imagine Mayor Phillips' disenchantment with learning this. Because maybe, you know what, maybe we're just learning about this now, but you can rest assured that it was probably leaked out sooner. You know, when you see Stephen Sweeney's name on that donation, that says a lot. I think it says a lot about the – I think that there's still animosity there between Sweeney and Phillips. Before, you know, Murphy really took off in terms of his candidacy, those are the guys that are going to be fighting for the Democratic nomination. You had Sweeney and the Norcross family backing him from the South. And, of course, you had Phillip trying to consolidate power in Newark with Mayor Ross Baraka. And then, of course, Mayor Torres in Patterson, which, of course, you know, I know he's had to step down recently due to corruption charges. But he was trying his best to consolidate support and power in the North. And they, you could tell that they were heading for a showdown in this year, in 2017, at the province. And it turned out to be nothing because, as we know, once Phillip decided to not run, and again, there's tons of speculation as to why he didn't run. But to the best of my knowledge, again, I think that a lot had to do with what was going on with Bridgegate. I think his name had been floated around about what was going on there, whether or not there had been some issues with the Port Authority and him, who knows. We're never going to know because the transcripts were sealed, so we're never going to really know exactly what the reasoning was. But on a random morning, you saw Jersey City Mayor Stephen Phillip just endorse Phil Murphy. So I'm sure that that must have stung him. And I think that knowing that Phil Murphy was consolidating a lot of support in the from the county chair, I think hurt Steve Sweeney's chances as well. And he ended up, you know, supporting and endorsing Phil Murphy. But I can tell you that in the months before that, there were some jabs being thrown around between Sweeney and Phillip. So to see this payment being made last year in December to Bill Matsakoudis' Camaro campaign, it's pretty interesting. So, you know, good job there by Insider and Jay Leakings out today reporting, you know, again, and that's the great journalism you're going to see from Insider and Jay. So, you know, hats off to Max Pizarro putting that out there concerning this. But I can tell you that seeing that, folks, was interesting for me. And then, of course, like I told you, you know, once Steve Phillip stepped down, not great. Now, listen, let's be very fair. Most likely he's going to be reelected this November. Excuse me, sorry about that. Allergies. I'm sure everyone listening today can sort of hopefully empathize. You know, hay fever is just driving us crazy here. I think he's most likely headed to a reelection in November. Many members of the city council will be able to stay along as well and see if he can retain control. But I'll say this much. The fact that Steve Phillips office will stay in Jersey City and not in Trenton, I think brings a smile to a lot of people's faces, including my own, because, again, I don't think I'm wrong for the story I told. I think I'm absolutely right. It was very disheartening to see that. That's not the Steve Phillip I got to know in the late months of 2012 when I was going to different events of his, covering him, interviewing him, and, of course, well into 2013 and later on once he was inaugurated in office. So I'll be the first one to say I was very disappointed. I thought I had a good rapport with the man. It turns out that it wasn't. And that's disappointing. And I know that I speak for many people in Jersey City, residents that I know, that are not very happy with the direction that Jersey City is going in. So we're going to find out exactly what type of chance Bill Matsakoudis has moving forward here in the months ahead. There's a lot of time between now and November. I know that I'm trying to get Bill on the show, see if Bill can come on to candidacy. We're going to find out if we can do that. And, you know, have an exclusive interview with him here on Talking to Hudson. So stay tuned for that as I am trying to get, trying to nail down that confirmation. So I'll keep you posted here, folks. And again, the Jersey City mayoral race should be interesting coming up here in the weeks and months ahead here in Hudson County. And we'll keep you posted here, of course, here on Talking to Hudson. Folks, again, toll free number, call in tonight, 657-383-0296. So time to call in, voice your opinion about anything Hudson County Again, toll-free number brought to you by Olivella Restaurant in North Bergen. And another, you know, another topic I wanted to talk about today, and it sort of goes back to what I was discussing earlier in terms of the respect I have for teachers, the admiration I have for my fellow educators. And so, you know, an article I subscribe to the NEA today. I get their emails delivered to my inbox. And an interesting article published last month here I wanted to share with you for parents here. I think that might create some discussion. We don't know exactly if it's going to apply here in New Jersey. We don't know if the Department of Education in Trenton is exploring this. But there was a very interesting study done by the NEA, the National Education Association, an article dated last month. And their article starts off as this: let them sleep. Later school times will improve graduation and attendance rates. So, interesting article there, published by the National Education Association, and of course also via the NJEA. So, good article here. I'll sort of, you know, paraphrase a little bit as they went on to say in the article. In the current climate of polarized debate about best school practices and policies, it's refreshing to learn that there are some ideas that are supported by research, and there's an emerging bipartisan consensus about what to do with it. Now, increasing body of evidence is showing that later school times are making a difference in students' lives. They're including improved educational outcomes and the mental well-being of students. Now, physicians, according to very recent studies, have been advocating for later start times for more than two decades, and the body of literature linking adolescent sleep with increased student success has only grown in depth and also in discussion. Now, there was a new study performed by Pamela McKeever from Central Connecticut State University and her colleague, Linda Clark, again, both professors there, that found that delaying the high school start times to 8:30 a.m. Was later significantly improving graduation and attendance rates. The study went on to say, quote, school districts set up students for failure by endorsing traditional school schedules, and this practice continues even in the face of mounting evidence supporting the benefits of a later start time. Now, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, in Atlanta, they reported that in 42 states, 75 to 100% of public schools start before 8:30 a.m. Now, according to the CDC, schools should begin no earlier than 8:30. Now, early starting times are out of sync with adolescent sleep cycles, and no, it's not because they're out late every night or glued to social media and video games either. But the adolescent body doesn't begin to produce melatonin, which is the essential hormone linked to sleep cycles, until around 11 p.m., which leaves adolescents with a limited window in which to obtain a sufficient amount of sleep each and every night. Now, insufficient sleep in teenagers has been linked to an increase in car accidents, substance abuse, suicide attempts, depression, and even criminal activity. Now, there was a study in 2014, folks, that again published here in the article by the NEA, that studied eight public high schools by Kyle Wallstrom, professor from the University of Minnesota, that found that a number of car crashes for teen drivers was significantly reduced by a simple shift in school start times from 7:35 a.m. to 8:55 a.m. Now, of course, listen, there are a few caveats to every study. Of course, you know, the study early on from from Central Connecticut State University and Professor McKeever there went on to say that, you know, it's a very subjective type of study. And one of the things that McKeever wanted to see on the record was her study didn't specifically measure the amount of sleep each student in the study got, but instead sort of relies on the prior research that links later school times to more sleep. Now, again, you know, as a college professor, certainly this doesn't affect me because my start times are very different in terms of when my classes are on. But when it comes to my fellow educators, you know, there's something interesting about this, about trying to start the school day a little bit later. It might be advantageous for students. It might be maybe advantageous because of traffic. But you know what the reality is, ladies and gentlemen, is that unfortunately not every schedule like this is going to be advantageous to parents. I think a lot of parents who work early hours sometimes rely on school buses to make sure their children get to school. Sometimes parents drive their own kids to school. And, you know, more times than not, if you're starting the school day later, it's more likely going to make a parent's ability to get to work on time even more difficult. So, you know, while I applaud Professor McKeever out of, you know, Central Connecticut State University for this study, I thought it was kind of interesting when I saw this because, you know, there's no doubt about the medical research that suggests that the melatonin doesn't really get sufficiently produced in a teenager's brain until later in the evening. So once that happens, the window for a good night's sleep is drastically reduced. And I get that. However, I think the biggest variable we're looking at here, and again, and I applaud the NEA for publishing this article, and I, you know, certainly for a lot of school teachers listening tonight, that might seem like a better alternative. I don't know how it would work out in certain districts, and I don't know how it would work out for parents. And I think that's probably my biggest concern, whether or not parents, how greatly affected they're going to be by, let's say, a shift like this, starting the school day at 8:30 instead of, let's say, 8 o'clock, where more times than not, parents have to get their kids to school on time, and then they have to get to work on time, and that's not always easy. So, you know, it's a very interesting dynamic. I think reading more about this, and I'll certainly cover about – I'll certainly discuss this more, folks, in the weeks and months ahead here, because it is a very interesting sort of premise as to whether or not it will increase academic performance and whether or not it will improve attendance, which we all know is a crucial component of our school system, whether it's in high schools, whether it's in middle schools or elementary schools. So, you know, again, you know, shout out to the NEA, you know, who I certainly have my issues with, which I detailed at length early on tonight. But there's no denying how this specific study or this proposal isn't exactly a bad idea. I think it certainly has a lot of merit. Perhaps if it's executed in, you know, a very diligent manner, I think if we're taking certain variables into account when it comes to school districts and maybe states, who knows? I think on the face level, it's a very good idea, but I think it's still very broad as it pertains to how it's going to impact parents. Not just, again, because if you're starting the school day later, then you're ending later. And whether or not that's also going to affect parents coming home and picking them up, and how that's going to affect after school activities, whether it's sports, whether it's you know, academic clubs, whether it's you know, clubs of any type. I remember being in high school. I remember being in different clubs, being part of the student council. That was important, and those are important activities. We don't know how that's going to be affected. We don't know how that can affect students' abilities to make sure that they are able to get everything done during the day, and whether or not a later school day or a later dismissal time is actually advantageous. We'll find out. Again, the body of research has been out there. Again, I applaud the NEA for sort of publishing this article and bringing it to light, but it still is lagging in terms of the traction that it needs to really get off the ground. So we'll find out. I mean, we're going to find out again whether or not it's going to be something that takes off here in New Jersey or even Hudson County. We're going to find out exactly. But certainly the NEA has been pushing for this, and I think that they're going to continue to push for this because the amount of medical research really has been in their favor. So we're going to find out exactly whether or not it actually will take off anywhere, you know, not just New Jersey, but anywhere really nationally. And we'll keep you posted here, folks, on the program as to whether or not this idea will ever come to fruition to help our students. And so we'll find out there. Well, folks, you know, let me tell you, it's about that time, and our hour is indeed up. And listen, don't forget that every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. live Eastern Standard Time, you can listen to the best commentary about everything Hudson County right here on Talk on the Hudson. So, again, if you missed any part of this evening's broadcast, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Talk on the Hudson from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Now, if you have a topic or an issue you want to hear about next week or in the coming episodes, please don't hesitate. Write to the show's inbox, which is talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Once again, write to the show's inbox, talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Now, don't forget to like Talk on the Hudson on Facebook. Again, the amount of likes is growing daily, so I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the fans of the show. And let's be real, whether it's on your morning commute, getting that daily workout, walking your dog in these nice days ahead of us, whether you're doing laundry, or you, for all my students tonight, they're studying for their finals, tune in, take a break, and trust me, you'll be happy you did. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, Talk on the Hudson is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant. It's indeed a brand new gym in Hudson County, and it's the best Italian food you will taste anywhere. Now, as I'm trying to get summer ready, it's really difficult because I keep going to Olivella, but you know what? It's so worth it because the food is amazing. It's delicious. It's so diligently prepared, fresh ingredients. Just a wonderful staff there. And Olivella Restaurant is located at 7709 Bergeline Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. Now, they're open for dinner 7 days a week. So make sure that you call it in advance for a reservation. Trust me, I do not suggest you showing up without a reservation. It does get packed there on a nightly basis. So you can call the reservation number 201-662-6110. 201-662-6110. Now check out their website, www.olivellanj.com. Don't forget to like Olivella Restaurant on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Instagram and Twitter. If it's unbiased and unfiltered, you know it. Imperial Boulevard, all the way from North Bergen, stretching into West New York, and then into Weehawken. Again, part of Imperial Boulevard, the home of Son Cubano, right on the waterfront again. I'm happy to inform everybody that last week, my event, to benefit the March of Dimes, raised over $3,000 to help women and families overcome the difficulties of premature pregnancies and to also help raise funds to provide resources for women and families and, of course, for babies and to make sure that every baby has a fighting chance. So, again, I want to thank all of my guests last week. We had over 100 guests appear at Son Cubano. I want to thank the management there and a great turnout. We raised over $3,000 to help the March of Dimes. So, again, good night. Port Imperial Boulevard, stretching from North Bergen into West New York and then ending in Weehawken. And don't forget.
Held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. If you've ever been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore. Well,
don't you let nothing, nothing stand in your way. I want you to listen, listen to every word I say, every word I say. Trying to make it the only person.